The Church of God the Eternal presents What is the Natural Body? This is the number 9 tape in this series, and it will be given by Mr. Raymond Cole.
I've mentioned it to you a number of times that a body has members in particular. As a matter of fact, that very concept is used by the Apostle Paul when inspired by the Holy Spirit to show the varying membership responsibilities within the body of Jesus Christ. And he even uses the various segments of the body, the arm, the hands, you know, the feet, the eye, the ear, the nose, the head, and so on. So we have various members of the body. But the body still is one. It's a whole. It's an entity. And that body is called the body of sin, not the body of righteousness. Then if there is a body of righteousness, which is faithful obedience on the part of the members in particular, where there is accord, oneness within that body, then surely the body of sin is a depiction then of all the uncanny, evil, ludicrous traits of humanity. So we see within the natural body then all these various members that do all these peculiar things. You know, the hands that are not diligent in labor, the feet that run to shed blood, and the eyes that see all kinds of iniquity and evil, and the ears that hear everything, and so on. You know, we have all kinds of problems, you know. There are too many people in the world that when they think they miss out on something, you know, they'll even go back and say, well, you know, I didn't hear that. Would you mind repeating? Now, they don't want to miss anything, you know. The ears are never full. And they would have been well blessed if they had said, thank God I didn't hear it. I'm glad of it. But no, I don't even think many of us run away from too much. We still like to hear everything. And it's a tragedy. We're going to have to educate these minds, I guess, to control ourselves so that we don't run to hear all the garbage and the nonsense. Or when we do hear it, to turn our backs and walk away. We have a responsibility, but I'm going to get to that responsibility later. We have talked about, of course, the hands, and we have talked about the feet, and the last time we talked about taste. I do not have any grand hopes, I never did, even when I prepared the sermon, that we were going to respond overnight, but I don't believe it. You couldn't convince me on a stack of Bibles 36 feet high because we all follow our taste buds and we like junk. Just like we humanly like junk, you know, in this form of rubbish or garbage or rumor or whatever it is. I don't know why we have been led to believe over the years that the taste buds are to be trusted implicitly. But we sure as the world do. Not realizing that the taste buds are just as unconverted as the heart and the mind or any other part of the human body. So we're probably not going to respond in any dramatic way to most of these things until we suffer a few more things in life. And I also am well aware of that. Now that isn't going to disillusion me because I know that, you know, we as individuals have to grow. What will be disillusioning, however, is any attempt to justify. If we were going to do it because, well, I just don't see it that way. Well, who cares how anyone sees it? You know, there is a way that seems right unto a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. So simply because it's the way we see it doesn't make it right or wrong. The fact is that God himself made it very clear that he created things to be used appropriately. And I am going to show some of those things later on. Whereas he in turn shows that man did not use it acceptably, but abused his responsibility. And so we have been given many, many distinct and differing levels of responsibility in life, but we have abused them. And we still do abuse them. But now we're coming to not the final one, but we're getting down toward the end of the ones that I have selected to use. Actually, I could have selected a number of other members of the body, but that isn't essential at this point. We can add on to that later. But I selected 7 with a capstone, a total of 8. The mind, of course, is going to be that 8th one because it affects every other member. You take the mind out of a human being, and he doesn't have any taste buds, and he doesn't have any hearing, and he doesn't have any of the other sensory capacities. So the mind gives direction to all the rest of it. That's why I've kept it until the final one, then we're going to talk about it. But today, I want to address the matter of the tongue. I have talked about it before, but I kept it until last in this series because it is rather significant in its context and what it represents so far as our orientation in life. We may have difficulties with the hands, we may have difficulties with the ears, we may have problems with the feet and so on. But there is no member of the body that creates more consternation and problem than the tongue. And we're going to see how God categorizes you if you've got control of it. Puts you in a rather unique situation. But in the meantime, we're going to go back and we're going to talk about that natural tongue. It is one of the members of this physical body, this body of sin. And let me assure you that it does its fair share. It scarcely ever misses a lick. And it is the one we use to safeguard, to protect, to justify every other member of our body. Because it's vocal. And within it, we are told, is awesome power. Awesome power within the tongue. So to initiate today, I want to turn to Proverbs 18 and verse 21. Proverbs 18, and let's note verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. That is, if we love the fruit of life, we're going to do certain things with the tongue. If we love the fruits of death, we're going to exploit its full potential. Let us ask the question of ourselves individually. How many people, inside or outside of the church, it makes little difference, have we literally crucified with our tongues? By the things that we have said, or indeed, we'll never say them to the people involved. The Bible shows us that one of the deceptive traits of human beings is always to seek a ready ear behind closed doors. Now, don't tell so-and-so. You've never heard that, have you? But I'm going to tell you a little juicy tidbit, but I wouldn't want it to get back. Never heard that? I'll bet there isn't a single individual here today that has not employed it. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. If we were going to be candid, open, honest, and we wanted to say something about a party, why don't we go directly to that party? Don't say it to somebody else. go right to them. Anything less than that is dishonest. Anything less than that is catering to the whim of the flesh. And anybody who listens to it is supporting it. Now, if death is involved in it, and you and I are hoping to avoid the ultimate death, then it certainly means we're going to have to avoid those proclivities. Then what is it that produces life? Is it ridicule of somebody else? Is it the evaluation of somebody else? Is it the censoring of other people? Is it manifesting a critical spirit and attitude? Is that life? Or is that death? You know, there are places in the Bible that show that we call black white, and white we call black, and sweet we call bitter, and bitter we call sweet, and up we call down, and down we call up. That's the perversity of man. And so it is that men feel that real living is to censor and criticize someone else. And yet God says that's death. That is death. But still the potential for life is there. I'm going to expand that concept a lot more when I get into the real purpose for which God gave us feet, hands, eyes, ears, a tongue, a mind, a heart. Why? He must have had some purpose for creating us with these distinct members. What is that potentiality? So there are significant questions that must be answered in this regard. Let's see now if we can understand basically what the natural tongue is like. And then when we see what that natural tongue is like, don't apply it to somebody else, for you don't have any authority there. Apply it to yourself. You're the only one that can change you. And so the duty is not to apply anything to anybody else. It is to apply it to yourself individually as I must to myself. I have only the added responsibility of preaching it, never to do the judging. That time has been appointed and Christ has already been given that responsibility. All right, let's turn then to Psalms 57 and verse 4. I'm going to ask somebody if they'd move. I can't even see the clock here, so I'll be running overtime. Knowing me, I will be. Anybody else, but nobody in that gallery back there in that last row may respond to that. All right? Psalms 57 and verse 4. You all know who I'm talking about, too. I wouldn't censor him at all. Although I did. That's right. I did tell him that I was going to have to get even this week. And I did it not even realizing it. See what happens? Psalms 57 and verse 4. My soul is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire, even the sons of men, whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword. God shows that in relationship to the tongue, as a member of the body, is also the teeth. They're incisors. They cut, they chew. And so we verbalize with the tongue as we also cut and chew with the teeth. And the combination of that is the manifestation of human contempt and ridicule, the censoring of others. We feel it's a divine right. Sure we do. There probably is not a single individual that does not believe what he has said is right. But that doesn't make it right. On the contrary, that only makes it 10 times worse. Remember, I have said to you that real conversion is the ability to see the self. It is perhaps the greatest miracle of all, because we really don't see the self. We have a concept of what we think is right, and we're going to say in relationship to that whatsoever we please, and then justify ourselves on the basis of our own personalized feeling about it. So we will cut and we will chew within an inch of somebody's life, especially if we can get behind closed doors, if we can find receptive ears. Ears that do not like to hear the word of God, they want to hear the recent tidbit of good news, quote unquote. And when they can find a receptive party, one who will throw in, as the Bible says, remember what he said in Proverbs, the first chapter? When you hear these things, don't turn your life over. Don't give or cater to that inclination or the demand or the expectation. If we're going to do the right thing, let's resist it. And we're not going to listen. You know, there is nothing that will stop an unsavory conversation more quickly than a back. Turn your back and walk away. And say, well, now, when we want to discuss the real word of God, positive things and things that are right in life, I'll talk and I'll listen. But I don't want to hear any of the other. That takes character, and lots of it. Because the ears just love to hear the other. And the tongue just loves to say it. We're born with those natures. So he said, my soul is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire, even the sons of men. That is, they're consumed with their passion, the desire, the determination to live whatever that mind and heart dictates. They're on fire. They've got intense feelings. David said it. He knew that these people who were criticizing him had intense feelings about him. Did that make it right? No. They can be stirred up within an inch of their lives. That didn't make it right either. Whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword. Now that is a part of that natural tongue. We're all born with it. You can know that you are beginning to make strides when a circumstance has been created that would normally have precipitated a piercing, sarcastic comment. And you walk away from it and smile and say nothing. Then you're making headway. Psalms 73. Psalm 73, verses 9 and 11. They set their mouth against the heavens. That's right. There actually is a form of belligerency against the will of God, either covertly or overtly. That is, they will do it directly, openly against God. They don't know about God in this case or that case or whatever the circumstance may be, but oftentimes they will do it covertly. That is, it is a form of deception. And only if you read the intent would you know that what they're doing is taking a swipe at God. They set their mouth against the heavens. That is, they're going to say what they want to say. God's unfair. God hasn't done this, and I don't see that, and I don't see something else. You know, those things frighten me. There have been times in my life when I wished that I hadn't been quite so close, because I would not have been surprised for a party to have been struck with lightning. At least that's how keenly I fear it. And there have been such circumstances where God has intervened, and they have been stricken. I wonder how the apostles felt on that day when Ananias fell. Here they were talking, you know, and they're just human beings like you and me. Here they're talking, you know, and there's great fervor and tremendous feeling, inspirationally, on the basis of the time and the conditions, the circumstances of that day. So there is great inspiration at that point, and then all of a sudden somebody keels over. And then lo and behold, his wife drops over. About that time, I suspect a few other people began to wonder, well, are we next? Must have been a little frightening. Then notice the response, verse 11. And they say, how doth God know? Because they can't see God, they're unaware of the fact that God has ears, hands, eyes, and all the power in the universe. So God hears, and God is able to take action anytime he wishes. But they say, how doth God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? What an insult. If that isn't the ultimate arrogance on the part of human beings, tell me what is. In other words, the intelligence is within only those that we can see. See, men cannot comprehend another domain in life. Spiritual things are outside of the realm of flesh. Flesh is something that is tangible to you and me. We can see it. It's here. But things in the spiritual realm are not visible. They're not tangible. They're not substance in the sense that you and I comprehend it. But simply because we do not abide in a different realm, does that mean that there is nothing there? You see, the interesting thing is that those who abide in the spiritual realm know both sides of the ledger. That is, they can comprehend on the basis of revelation the spiritual things as well as what they have studied out physically. But those within the physical realm can understand only the physical. Then how can anybody, scientist or otherwise, evaluate what he doesn't know, an area in which he is totally ignorant. I don't care if he stands there and says, I don't believe that it exists. What does that have to do with it? You know, there were scientists in the times past who believed that if you went far enough west, you'd fall off the end of the earth too. So are you always going to abide by what scientists say? You know, they're colossally ignorant in a lot of areas. And the sooner they find out, the better they are. There is knowledge in the Most High. It's spiritual knowledge. So it doesn't make any difference then how many human beings and how many degrees those human beings have, where they have gone to school and what they have studied. It doesn't make any difference what they think or say. Not at all. Because they're ignorant. They are totally ignorant of the spiritual realm. Oh, I grant you, they have knowledge in the physical realm, but they have none in the spiritual realm. They are the implicit, as we would say in the vernacular, idiots in that area. They know not, and they do not comprehend in that regard. All right, next, let's notice Psalms, the fifth chapter. Psalms 5, verses 8 through 10. Lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness because of mine enemies. Make thy way straight before my face. For there is no faithfulness in their mouth. There is no faithfulness in their mouth. Now, what in the world do you mean by faithfulness being in their mouths? That means in their conversation. What he is saying simply is this, that what they said yesterday may have no relevancy today. If an argument is necessary, they'll change in midstream. There is no faithfulness in their mouths. Their inward part is very wickedness. Their throat is an open sepulcher. They spew out their venom, their contempt, their evil. They flatter with their tongue to gain their own nefarious ends. They will use all form of flattery and deception. Destroy thou them, O God, let them fall by their own counsels. Cast them out in the multitude of their transgressions, for they have rebelled against you. So here are physical ones then who have rebelled against God, and they're spewing out their venom via the only organ that communicates, the mouth. And so it is natural for men, the natural tongue, to spew out its venom, its contempt for that which it does not accept, or that for which it holds contempt and hate. That's the natural tongue. So how in the world can you take or accept what the tongue will spew out, where it is going to always justify the self? Here is the classic example of it. Psalms 15. Psalms 15, verses 2 through 4. He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. He that backbiteth. All right, let's go up and find out in verse 1. to whom we are addressing this. Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? That is, who is going to remain in your presence, in your congregation? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. Well, then that must mean that the natural man does none of those things. He that backbiteth not with his tongue. He that backbiteth not with his tongue. That is, he who does not censure, ridicule, or make adverse comments about anyone. That's what backbiting is. He that backbiteth not with his tongue. Then what does this have to do with the natural tongue? The exact opposite side of that ledger tells you what the natural tongue is. It backbites. It does not lead a true and straight course. You cannot have confidence in it. It does not walk nor speak uprightly. For the tongue is a sword. It's perverse. Nor doth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor. That is, he will not pick it up if somebody else does make a comment. Nor take up a reproach against his neighbor. Who is your neighbor? Christ qualified it. In whose eyes a vile person is contemned. Why, that hardly seems fitting, because for most human beings, oh, please tell me more. Whereas here is one is upset when somebody makes these devious, damnable comments about some other party. In whose eyes a vile person is contemned, but he honoreth them that fear the Eternal. Men, however, change that all the way around. They like the one who will spill it all. But he honoreth them that fear the Eternal. That is, they have control and they fear the repercussions. They're not worrying about the present, but their hope is in tomorrow. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changes not. Makes a commitment, he's going to back it up and carry it out. All right? Further concerning the natural tongue, let's turn to Proverbs 12 and verse 18. Proverbs 12 and noting verse 18. There is that speaketh like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise is health. The dividing line between health and an unhealthy circumstance is in that which we repeat. There is that speaketh like the piercings of a sword. It's injurious. Hurtful. It doesn't care who is affected. It doesn't care about anybody else. It's safeguarding the self. But the tongue, here's the contrast now, the tongue of the wise is health. It's rewarding. It's comforting. It's reassuring. It provides an excellent dimension in affection and regard. Proverbs 15 now. So we have seen then that the natural tongue there is like the piercings of a sword. What about Proverbs 15 now, verses 2 and 4? The tongue of the wise uses knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools pours out foolishness. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach in the spirit. Perverseness thereof is a breach in the spirit. It is shattering, dismaying, injurious, contemptible, hateful. It is odious. So we then must replace the natural tongue with a wholesome tongue, where we extol, we uphold, we pay deference to someone else. We take the liability ourselves, and we give the benefit to the other party. Proverbs 21 and verse 6. The getting of treasures by a lying tongue is a vanity tossed to and fro of them that seek death. In other words, if we're going to pursue that way, we're actually already in the walk of death. That's what we're pursuing, and we don't realize it. We are pursuing death and therefore going to pay the price for it. But the point to remember is that the natural tongue is not to be trusted. It's a lying tongue. That's the natural tongue. Now, of course, you know, I would doubt that many people in life would tell whoppers. That's the insidiousness of it. Because now they wouldn't go out, you know, and fabricate some great yarn for their advantage. But to waffle just a little bit, to change just slightly, you know, to give it an added emphasis or a little color or whatever, is never considered that too injurious. And yet the problem is, it is that part that is more damnable than the other. We have swallowed the giant deception that a big lie is a whole lot worse than a little devious thing, when in reality, the little devious thing is the biggest problem that we possess. That we have to master. Where the tongue is truthful, and it speaks only honor and integrity, and is not caught in the trap of deception. Job 6 and verse 30. Job 6 and note verse 30. See what Job had to say about it here. Is there iniquity in my tongue? Cannot my taste discern perverse things? Well, here is a text that we gave to you when we were talking about the perversity of our taste buds. But it is interesting that Job relates it to what's in the tongue. What courses or crosses the tongue is either sweet, acceptable, or it's perverse and bitter. Just like food is. Our tongue likes what it wants to receive. And so Job asked the question, is there iniquity in my tongue? That is, has the tongue yielded to the temptation? Is it aligned to the inclination, the desire to safeguard itself? Is it perverse? And how would we know if it is perverse or iniquitous unless we had had a natural, unbiased arbiter? Can you accept the whim of self? No. Then the only way you would ever know is if you put it up against the judgment of an unalterable standard. Our tongues, therefore, must be weighed against the truth of God. So our tongues oftentimes are just as perverse in the sense of the words that cross them as the taste buds contained therein in the reception of junk which we feed them. Iniquity in our tongues, only we can evaluate, and that against the absolute standard. In Job 13 and verse 5, Job 13, and noting verse 5, it says, oh, that you would altogether hold your peace, and it should be your wisdom. Oh, that you would altogether hold your peace. Sometimes the better part of valor, integrity, and wisdom is the ability to close the mouth and leave it closed. Or Job, in this case, said that what his friends brought to him was a basket of lies. And he pretty well knew. And so he said here in verse 4, but you are forgers of lies. You are all physicians of no value. That is, you are those who give counsel that is worthless in nature. Oh, that you would altogether hold your peace. In other words, sometimes the tongue speaks when it doesn't have anything to say. So the natural tongue then really doesn't know its limitations. It's ready to run and to fulfill the expectation of a mind at any given time. It does not stop and say, well, now wait a minute, what are you asking me to speak? The natural tongue is ready to do whatever the heart and the mind dictate. And so you can't trust it then. Simply because you say it doesn't make it right. We have to weigh it. Matthew 15 and verse 18. Matthew 15. And let's note verse 18. Here in, let's begin in, back in verse 16 so we get the context. And Jesus said, are you also yet without understanding? Do not you yet understand that whatsoever entereth in at the mouth goeth into the belly, that is, into the stomach, and is cast out in the draught, that is, it goes through the elementary system, it's processed, and then the residue is taken care of. but those things which proceed out of the mouth. Now, the taste buds, if they're perverted, allow almost anything to go within. But that's not nearly as bad as that which starts from within and comes out. Now, that isn't to say that it is not bad, because it is. But it is not as bad as that which starts from within. It's already there, and it proceeds outward, not inward. But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile the man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, blasphemies, etc. So we find then a two-way street with regard to the tongue or the mouth. It receives inwardly whatever it accepts as favorable or acceptable. If it is not taught, if it is not instructed, it will receive anything. But then it also is perverted on the basis of what is within. So the mouth therefore utters its perversity on the basis of what proceeds from the mind or from the heart. And finally now, I want you to notice James 3. James, the third chapter, verses 5 through 6, and then verse 8. Even so, the tongue is a little member. There it is called, a member. And boasts great things. Now, can you imagine if the tongue were as big as the leg? What kind of trouble it could get into? It's just a little member. But it can get you into more trouble by far than both of your legs. Both hands and torso and all the rest of you. It's capable of upholding its own pretty well. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. It gives us a wrong orientation. It creates unusual problems for us. It exacerbates our conditions. It defiles us. It creates chaos and consternation. It is deceptive. It is hateful. It is filled with venom. And yet we trust it. Such is the human tongue. And it sets on fire, and it is set on fire of hell. That is, of death. What did we read in Proverbs 18 and 21? Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Here we see the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire of death. It is the instrument by which many people have been destroyed. Verse 8, but the tongue can no man tame. The tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Is that your tongue? Do you believe that that is your tongue? Or is that only the tongue of somebody else? You can't change what you do not recognize. When we recognize that that is the natural tongue that is within the head, the mouth, of every one of us, then we can begin to do something with it. Because we don't trust it. When we open up that mouth, we know that we're opening Pandora's box. And only if we recognize it and we're conscious of it every time we open our mouth will we safeguard what proceeds out of it. Then and then only will we effectively control that tongue. That's the natural tongue. It gives us a pretty clear picture. But next I want to cover. It is the cause of strife, of hate, of poison, of contempt, and of wrath. And from there then, we want to see the scope of man's intent with regard to his tongue. Rather significant. And then next we want to see how men will safeguard that tongue as a divine right. And then what we want to do is take a look at the price we're going to pay for that right and ask ourselves if we want to pay it. And then take a look at the Christian's duty with regard to that tongue. And then finally, the ultimate self-control. We'll take a good look at it. We'll continue next time.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented What is the Natural Body? This was the number 9 tape in this series, and it was given by Mr. Raymond Cole.